The title of today's presentation is Arrogance, Exaggeration of Self-Esteem. Sometimes I ask myself, why am I being asked to talk about a certain subject? And when it came to this one, I said, oh, I know why. Because I used to be big-headed, but now I'm perfect. Okay, I'm only joking. Yeah, arrogance. I'm going to give a quick quote from Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 11 to 18. Straight after we've been instructed to make a blessing after eating, on the assumption that we were satiated, that we reached the point of feeling, I feel I've eaten very well, an experience which I think you can possibly relate to right this moment, comes along verse 11 and says, Hisham Melecha, guard yourself, Pentishka et Hashem Elokecha, in case you forget Hashem your God, Levil Tishma Mitzvah, and if I forget God, then I will not do His mitzvahs, His instruction, Mishpatav, His statutes, Chukosav, that I'm instructing you today. Pen, perhaps, toichal, you'll eat, v'savata, you'll feel satisfied. Uvatim toivim tivne ev yashavta, you'll build homes, you'll settle there. Uvkarecha v'tzoynecha yirbiyun, your flocks, your herds will increase. V'chesev zahav and silver and gold, yirbelach, you'll also have more of that. And everything you have increases, gets better. Quality of life improves. And then, Ram Levavecha, the heart will get haughty, will feel elevated, and forget God. I don't need Him anymore because I'm independent. The God that took you out of Egypt. Interesting that Hashem had to put in that introduction over there. Don't forget who I am. From the house of slavery. Hamolichecha, Hashem doesn't finish with His resume. I'm the one who took you, Bamidbar, Hagadol, in that great desert, the Hanoira, awesome. Nachash Saraf Yakrav, there were all sorts of scorpions and snakes and deadly animals. The Tzimain, thirst, starvation. There's no food and water, bread and water, our basic diet for 3 million people, three times a day. Asher ein mayim, there's no water, etc. I fed you in the midbar. There you got to know me, and I tested you. Leman anosecha, leman nisasosecha, lehisivecha beachrizecha. I wanted to test you, taking you into the desert to see if you would retain your relationship. And you're totally dependent on me. You're surrounded by man, this heavenly bread coming down. You have a traveling well bringing water to every single tent. You're totally dependent on me. What happens when you arrive in the land of Israel and you enter the homes which are already standing there, it's a long story on its own, and you start sowing the land, plowing, harvesting, and now you become less and less dependent on me, at least it appears that way, because there's no heavenly bread coming down, no traveling well, the clothes not growing on you, become more and more dependent upon oneself and upon society, the danger is that you're going to forget me. So ends off. The Amata, verse 17, and this is the probably most powerful verse which is used to describe when we feel that we don't need God and it's all on our credentials. The Amata, and you shall say Bilvavecha in your heart, in your mind, in your thoughts. You know why I'm doing so well? Koichi, it's my own strengths, my own talents. The Oitzem Yadi, the power of my hands, my talents, my abilities, my credentials, my resume. The college that I went to. Asar li did for me et hachayil hazeh, all the success. Any victory I have? Listen, I worked very hard. But how do you deny that to yourself if you really did? I mean, you worked through college, you got grade A's and it wasn't easy. You worked on building yourself a new career, maybe even built up your own business. One more quote. Deuteronomy 17:20. Who amongst all the Jews do you think may possibly have the greatest test of arrogance? The smallest, or the greatest? The greatest. So comes along the Torah and puts aside several of the 613 mitzvahs just for the king of Israel. Chapter 17, verse 20, goes like this. V'haya kishisoy al kisei mamalachtei. It will be that when the king sits on his throne, is it possible with all the press conferences and all the videos and everyone's tuned in on the king sitting on his throne, the kasav loy et mishna Torah zois, he should have written this entire Torah, the entire scroll of the five books of Moses, al sefer, in the scroll form, melifnei akohanim alevim. Verse 19, V'haisa imai, it will be with him. V'karabai, he should read in it, kol yamei chayov, every single day of his life. Never miss a day. Why? Leman, in order that, yilmad leyirat Hashem elokav, he should learn to fear, train himself to feel God's presence, lishmor et kol divrei hatoyah zois, to keep all the words in this book, v'et achukim ha'ele la'asoysam, to do them. And here comes the clincher. Levilti, so that he should not, rum levavai, feel elevated in his mind, get haughty, arrogant, me'echav, above his brothers, me'echav, from his peers, or levilti surim in ha-mitzvah yamin u'smol, he shouldn't go to the right or to the left of the instructions in the Torah, leman yarech yamim al-melachtos, so he should have long life in his kingship, hu uvanov bekerav Yisrael, he and his descendants amongst the Jewish people. The Torah is telling us that arrogance is another choice. Just like happiness is a choice to enjoy what's already good, and anger is a choice to focus on what's not good and respond negatively, so is arrogance a choice to give credit to myself and not to another source that is the original source, Hashem, or any of his mailmen, or any of his messengers, whether it be our parents, whether it be the boss, whether it be our clients, whoever it is, our customers, whoever it is out there who's helping us. Wherever arrogance is placing credit on my shoulders, it's called misplaced credit, misplaced appreciation. But wait a minute, what happens if I work for what I do have? I mean, I have got some credentials. You take care of yourself physically. You come to classes and feeding your mind. What's arrogant about that? So we're going to see there are two sides to gaiva. There are two sides, a negative and a positive. And we're going to hopefully look clearly at the distinctions between the two. So defining gaiva, defining arrogance, we would say like this. Have you ever met someone who said, I've got to tell you about my digestive system. It's incredible. Every time I put food in my mouth and I chew and chew and chew and I swallow it down, it's automatic. It's amazing. It just takes care of myself. And when I need to, it expels the waste and the nutrition remains inside my body and I grow. I feel great about myself. Now, if you met someone who starts talking this way, what would you say about them? Poor person. Let me recommend you a good... what's the matter? How about someone says, I brush my teeth every morning and evening. But it's pure arrogance. It's absurd. I mean, why shouldn't you brush your teeth? Because, it's taking care of my teeth and I won't have to go to the dentist. I mean, so obviously you and I would look aghast at someone who would make a comment like that. What happened about being a grade A student? I got a grade A. Now wait a minute, what's the difference between getting a grade A and working for it and brushing my teeth? It's also a discipline. Any suggestions? What's the difference? I got that promotion, yes?
More effort,
okay. If I succeeded employing more effort and I got the result that the effort could possibly equal, is that a reflection on my ability?
Not alone,
but doesn't it show that if I was able to put that level of effort in to get a grade A instead of a B, that means that I have the ability to get a grade A. I just proved it. So if I have that ability, what would your expectation be of me? A grade A or more. So if I'm brushing my teeth, That's only a reflection of my ability. And the fact that I discipline myself to do that, does that mean I should give myself the credit of my digestive system? I brush my teeth every day. I'm a grade A student. Wait a minute. If I'm a grade A student, that means I have abilities that I have been blessed with, perhaps trained and nurtured. But ultimately, that says that I've got that muscle. I've been moving it. Where did the muscle come from in the first place? Is it all only me? Mark Spitz won, I think, 5 gold medals. 7? Thank you, Sydney. 7 gold medals in the Olympics. It was all in one go, is that right? All in one Olympic Games.
1972.
Sure.
Wow. Easier than Munich Massacre.
Okay, 1972. Thank you. And when he got out the pool and he won those medals, and you could see across his chest these 7 medals, and he kind of said, when they asked him, "How did you do it, Mark?" "Well, it wasn't easy. 8 hours a day in the pool, 7 days a week, 365 days a year for 4 years. Now, I'll ask you, if you don't get a gold medal after that amount of effort, you should drown yourself. I'm only joking, but wow, if that's what you put in, you're probably a candidate for a gold medal. Where's the arrogance? Where's room for arrogance? See, if a person's putting in the effort, that's a display, a demonstration, a reflection of ability or increased ability. So yes, I discipline myself, I increase my discipline. It's true. But the result, I'm going to say, is mine. How many other variables are there in getting the success of the result? In business. In getting the gold medal. There's other people also competing. So the question is really like this. Does arrogance really exist? According to our sages, it doesn't exist. It's an illusion. Rather like real love is appreciation of true qualities and virtue and showing that appreciation. So plastic love, infatuation, would be where I'm in love with something which is very temporal, perhaps only an image on the outside, something that might be very gratifying for a very short while, but not long-lasting in order for it to be a real long-lasting relationship or real long-lasting love between the person and the object he loves. So arrogance, we're told, is actually an illusion where I fool myself into giving credit to me as opposed to saying Toda Lashem, thank you Hashem, for this in my life. So the distinction is the following. Where a person says, I take pride in my accomplishments, that's bordering or going into arrogance. Where a person says, I take pleasure in my accomplishments, thank God I was placed in this family. Thank God I had these opportunities. Thank God I was given this education. Thank God I had these teachers. Thank God I had those classes. I had these friends. And I start pointing fingers to all the supports that brought me to where I am. That's called humility. Humility is actually recognizing the very same qualities that the person who's arrogant recognizes, but points fingers to a different source. So that even where a person is accomplished, he built himself up that business from scratch, self-made millionaire, worked without a husband, he died on her, or divorced, and she had to bring up the kids on her own. It's true. We owe ourselves credit. Pat ourselves on the back. Absolutely. Pride? No, that's arrogance. Pleasure? That, thank God, I have this in my life, or I had these opportunities, or this is who I am, this is what I have, and I'm getting better. That doesn't have to be arrogance. It really depends where I'm looking. Who is the source? Who do I really give credit to? Now, does that mean I don't take credit for myself? No. Take credit for yourself, but who do I say I owe gratitude to? The people and the opportunities and Hashem that brought about who I am and who I'm becoming. Arrogance is not acknowledging my true qualities. Arrogance is saying I'm the source of my good qualities. Arrogance is saying I'm the source of my good qualities. Yesterday we mentioned a distinction which I want to share with you again for those who were not here and for those who are, it'll be review. Self-esteem and self-confidence are not necessarily synonymous. Self-esteem, the way the Torah describes a Torah self-image is that we are a reflection of God. We're created not as physical bodies, because you and your friend sitting next to you and your parents and your sisters and your siblings and the clients at work and everybody else are sharing basically the same vehicle for moving around and being functional. Eyes, nose, body, and all the functions of the body. One has more or less the same possessions. A car, a Rolls Royce, a Porsche, or a Chevy. We more or less have the same living. One has a beautiful palace, one has a second home, the other one's just about making the rent on a very small one-bedroom apartment. But essentially, those differences are not really so gigantic. The distinction between one person and another, of course, is the choices and the accumulation, the consequences, the results of the choices that we're making every day. We're ba'alei bechira, we're described as masters. Ba'al literally means a master or owner or spouse. Bechira of choice. So we're masters of choice. That's where we really have our distinction. And the choices we make change our personality. That's how we move forward. So the neshama, which is the personality, the neshama, the soul of the person, this is a reflection of Hashem. Hashem is unlimited in kindness, unlimited in love, unlimited in compassion, unlimited in forgiveness, unlimited in appreciation. And if you think about it, you know, we're so appreciated by God. You know, every day we wake up, another day, it means you still trust me. You got what for me to do today? The proof of the matter is I woke up. If you had given up on me, you wouldn't have. So Hashem obviously appreciates us to put us in the world and continues to feed all that we need to survive. So with the unlimited goodness that is in Hashem, if we are a reflection of Him, that means potentially our soul in this lifetime, our personality, has the potential for unlimited, until 120 years, unlimited kindness, unlimited compassion, unlimited giving to ourselves and to others, unlimited forgiveness to create healing where it's timely and appropriate, unlimited growth, unlimited learning, unlimited teaching, unlimited contribution to ourselves first and those who count most in our lives. So if our true tzelem Elokim, our true reflection of Hashem, our true self-image, if our true self-image is really our reflection of Hashem, then the more righteous we behave, the more in touch we are with the true reality of our identity. As opposed to feeding the image on the outside, wearing the right clothes, driving the right type of car. And I'm not putting that down. We're going to get to the positive side of so-called arrogance, where materialism is God's gift for us to function at whatever optimum we can. So we're not putting down materialism as false. It's not the true image of who we really are. And that's not the goal. It's a means. We know that. Arrogance is where I give credit to I am my car, I am my clothes, I am my vacation. And when I talk about myself and where I go and who I rub shoulders with and where I am in business and what a great deal I just cut, I'm describing things outside of myself. I'm not describing my essence. I'm not describing any part that is a true reflection of the all-righteous Creator. I'm describing abilities and results. But that's not who I am or who I'm here to become. All that is for feeding the family. All that is for supporting me to build my own righteousness. And those are places, the workplace and the family and the home. These are the places, physically, materially, where we exist in order to exercise righteousness. But that's not the actual living. So in this sense, I would like to change the title of today's topic. Arrogance is not an exaggeration of self-esteem. Arrogance is a distortion of self-esteem. Self-esteem is about righteousness, living Hashem's words. When we don't speak Lashon Hara, we hold ourselves back, and we eat kosher, and we speak words of appreciation, that's living righteously. When we're honest in the business, that's living righteously. When we forgive with compassion, and it's not easy to do that, that's living righteously. When we think of other possible interpretations of other people's negative behavior being done chaschus, that's living righteously. When we give charity, tzedakah, that's living righteously. When we keep Shabbos, that's living righteously. When we show love, kindness, appreciation in every which form, materially, verbally, even in our minds, that's living righteously. So if that's our true self-esteem, then arrogance to say that I don't need you, I'm better than you, I'm superior to you, if that's my conclusion because one person has more information than another, or one person has got better results on the stock market than the other, this is a false conclusion because there are many variables that go into a person making money. There are too many variables going into a person's health for me to really say it's because of me that I'm healthy. Yes, eating healthy will probably lead to healthy results. If I eat healthy tomorrow, I can expect reasonable health the next day as well. If I'm eating healthily today, I can expect to live well tomorrow and for the future. If I'm careful about money, I live within my means. I spend less than I earn. Wow! I'll repeat that. I spend less than I earn. I pay off credit cards at the end of the month, or even better, I don't have any credit cards, maybe one for emergencies. Credit cards are just a big lie, it means debt cards really, but they won't call it that. It's really debt cards. Credit cards, now, credit cards are a great invention if you want to be able to live beyond your means and have less money at the end of the month, but be able to live at the standard that I want to live or that other people are living at, only to discover that eventually it catches up. The question really is that what my life is really about is giving credit where it belongs. The people who are the male men and persons for delivering the goods, whether it's our parents, yes, there are some parents who are abusive too, whether it's our friends and neighbours, the community, our spouse, and even our children, wherever we are receiving, and we give credit for that, we become humble in realising that I cannot do it all on my own. It's rather like being inside a boat, and in your cabin, you take out a drill, and you start drilling a hole in the bottom, and everyone in the other cabins can't feel it. There's leaks of water coming all over the place, and they walk in and say, "What are you doing?" He says, "Get out of here. This is my cabin. I can do what I want in it. You're affecting all of us. Hey, I'm on my own. This is my cabin. If I want to drill holes, I want to go deep sea diving. That's my business. Get out of here." And the whole boat sinks. None of us are on our own. We're all so connected. We are totally dependent on each other. When you make a phone call, you need the operator. You go into the store. I need thousands upon tens of thousands upon hundreds of thousands of people before I pick the product off the shelf and take it home. There are hundreds of thousands, no exaggeration, possibly millions of people involved in having the food on the shelves for me to be able to have beans and coffee and milk and orange juice. Millions, no exaggeration, of people involved in the harvesting and the buying and the selling and putting the trucks together and the real estate and the printing and the canning. Every part of the process, even the truck that carries the produce from the manufacturer to the store, those parts of the truck, you figure out how many people are involved over there. You figure out one cup of coffee, just the beans, the coffee beans alone, there's probably hundreds of thousands of people involved. We are all so dependent, connected, that arrogance is an illusion. In this best marriage, this room alone, if we just take the furniture, which had to be taken from the trees which were once planted by someone, and even if they weren't, they were there all along, so you know what? We still needed all the lumberjacks, and we needed the sawmill, and we needed the transportation, until it got to become paper, and we're so interrelated and dependent that arrogance is the message, I don't need you, because I did it without you. And I don't want to admit that I could have done it without you. Because if I do, that means I owe you a debt of gratitude. And if I owe you a debt of gratitude, that means I couldn't have done it all on my own. And I become dependent. I'd rather believe that my talents, my personal strength, my credentials got me to where I am. I'll give you a quick story. There was a gentleman, let's call him Joe. Joe loses his job in a very big company and was doing extremely well. And based on the salary he had and the lifestyle that he was able to support because of that salary, to lose his job now meant that suddenly there was no cash flow for the mortgage, for the kids' school tutoring, and everything suddenly was piling up. And he goes to a friend of his and says, can you help me? I'm out of a job. I don't know what to do. He says, that's interesting you say that right now, because your resume might be just the right resume for someone I know who's looking for someone of your qualifications. Let me give him a call. Picks up the phone and sets up an interview. So Michael is the one who picked up the phone, set up the interview, and Joe goes and gets the job. And it's better terms, better salary, better hours than the last job. And within a matter of years, he's able to pay off the mortgage, he buys a second home, he has his own private yacht, and years down the line, the muzzle changes, And our friend Michael is sitting. I don't get it right. Michael's the one who made the phone call, right? Right, okay. Now, Joe. Who made the phone call? Michael made the phone call, Joe. Michael made the phone call.
Joe is the guy.
Right. At least someone's listening.
Michael got him the job.
Okay, Michael got him the job.
Yes.
Right? So now, Joe falls on bad times.
Joe?
Oh, no, Joe, no, Michael. Michael falls on bad times. Michael falls on bad times. Thank you. So Michael says, you know what? I remember that day I helped out Joe. Right? Good. I remember that day I helped out Joe. Maybe he can help me out. So Michael goes to Joe and says, Joe, you remember that time that I helped you out? Yeah, sure. Well, I fall in a difficult situation right now. I lost my job, and I'm behind 4 months on my mortgage, and they want to go into pre-closure. What do you call it?
Foreclosure.
Thank you. Foreclosure. I have an asset, but it's not. I have an asset which is not liquid, but in a few months' time, I'll be able to free it up. And here's the paperwork. It's more than what I'm asking, but I need a loan of a few thousand dollars. It's like $5,000 to carry me through for the next 3 months till I can get my money out and I can pay you back. If you want, we can make an arrangement and interest. Could you help me out? And Joe says, here. And throws him 25 cents.
What?
Here's for the phone call.
Here's for the phone call.
God.
Michael is devastated. Why? Why? And the reason why is, if Joe would have to admit what he really owes Michael, that 25 cents represents the job he now has, the promotion he's had since, his kids who are through college. He paid off his mortgage, he's got a second home and a yacht, all because of that 25. If I have to really show you gratitude, there's no end to how much I really owe and should help you. But if I can't bear to admit what I owe you, I would rather pay the price of what I call denial, and that's 25 cents. Now, I know you and I are outraged by this. How many millions of people are involved in setting up our lives, that we can wear clothes and wear shoes, and we've got a telephone, and we've got a car, we've got a home. This is not about a guilt trip, this is about misplaced credit, misplaced appreciation. And we get a cup of coffee, and those beans took thousands of people to get into this cup. The polystyrene cup alone took another many tens of thousands. The milk, right? For the cows and the milking and the processing, the pasteurizing and the transportation and the packaging and the printing, the delivery, sugar. Well, no, man. Let's take the sugar out. Let's put in what do you call it?
Honey.
Sorry.
Honey.
Honey. Okay, I was thinking of sweet and low. Thank you. Let's put in sweet and low. Whichever it is, there are tens and hundreds of thousands of people involved in this cup of coffee, and God says, "Don't put it in my mouth until I recognize." Shehakol Nehya Bidvara. Everything came about by your request, your instruction. You said it shall be done. There shall be people who love working in printing, people who love being lumberjacks, people who love driving trucks 18 hours a day. There are people who absolutely love cleaning the streets. Says Hashem, when I make a bracha, I'm recognizing the source of my blessing, the blessing that's in my life. So on the other side of arrogance is recognizing that it's not me, I can't do it alone. Yes, I paid for that cup of coffee, I paid for the food in the store, I paid for the car, I paid for the phone system, I paid for my home, I pay my bills. Hashem is a source of all blessing. And I owe it to his choice of messengers who brought it to me. The spouse, the children. And taking for granted is like saying, I am me, my world runs around me, I control, I don't need you, I don't need anybody. That is the danger that we're referring to over here. There are three categories of gaiva, three categories of arrogance. One is the body, Two is wisdom, and three is wealth. Money, possessions. Let's look at each one. This is taken from Orchot Tzadikim, one of the works on Jewish ethics, one of the famous ones, probably about 700 years old. And it divides arrogance into these three categories, and then explains the positive and the negative of each one. Looking at the body first, looking at the negative side, so we can end off on the positive side, we look at the heart, the lave. The lave is the place of the mind, the thoughts. I know heart refers to the heart, lave refers to the heart, but it's a metaphor for the mind. When I think that you are less than me, that's arrogance. When I think that I'm superior to you, I've got better information than you, that's arrogance. Even if it would be true that you're better qualified and you know more, and you're the one who's giving the advice because you've got superior information, it doesn't make you or me superior. It's a reflection of having had better education, better opportunities. Therefore, I'm not better than you, but you might be better off than the other person. I graduated from a more prestigious college. Well, it just didn't happen that way. There were pieces along the way which led up to that. I have to recognize, where did I come from? It's all on my own credentials. I know more than you. Great, so you started more, but maybe this other person didn't have the same opportunity, or started late. See, arrogance is an illusion of where credit belongs. We look at our eyes. Looking at faults in others is arrogance. It's saying that I don't have those, you do. Well, what a pity you haven't learned to grow. It's looking down, putting down. And when I do that with my eyes, I'm using my eyes for arrogance. My ears, not listening to the pain of another person, is a form of arrogance. Your pain has nothing to do with me, as long as it has nothing to do with me. That's arrogance. Not listening to the wisdom of others, or the experience of others, is also arrogance. I don't need you, because I know better. I could figure out better than you. I would come to better conclusions anyway. I would rather learn it my own, and not save the time. And anyway, I don't count your experience and your conclusions as meaningful. Anyway, I don't agree with your conclusions about your experience. Wherever I do that, I am practicing arrogance. If I use my mouth for boasting of my accomplishments, I'm being arrogant. Or speaking down at others, I'm being arrogant. Insulting, or putting down, or depreciating is a form of arrogance, because I'm saying, I am and you're not. I have it, you don't. I'm there, you're not. Complaining, anger, are forms of arrogance, because it says, if you would listen to me, then it would be okay. God, if you did it the way I think it should be done, I'd have nothing to complain about. And lastly, on our mouth, eating and drinking extremely expensive delicacies, listen, once in a while, on a very special occasion, not denouncing that, but to consistently go to parties to be able to eat and drink special cocktails and beverages, this is arrogance. I only associate with certain types of people and parties, you know what I mean? I only hold the glass in a certain way, you know? All this is arrogance. It's a choice of the way we use our body. It's interesting, I remember living in England, whenever students came out of Cambridge and Oxford, suddenly their whole tonality was totally different. They all speak the same way, if you know what I mean. You know, very, oh, very proper, of course. Yes, I understand what you mean. Oh, it's terribly so. It's so false. That's not who you were 10 months ago. But we pick it up because peers... Our neck and back, says Shulchan Aruch, the code of Jewish law, I'm not allowed to walk like this. Now, if you're in a brace, that's different, but that's called arrogance. A straight neck, it's arrogance, communication of arrogance from my body. The Talmud is brought in Shulchan Aruch, I shouldn't take wide strides. I shouldn't walk like this, with a straight back and wide strides. Arrogance is a communication of arrogance. It doesn't mean we should walk like this. In fact, the Talmud, and it's in Broad Shulchan Aruch, one should walk not with big strides, but medium-sized strides, and the head slightly lower down, and the eyes not looking up, and the head not looking up, but lowered, so there's a humility there. We're even told, wearing loud and extravagant clothes to get attention is like saying, me! Look at me! Me! Me? can't you? No, we try to dress in a way that doesn't bring special attention, but also doesn't bring shame. We're not allowed to dress with unclean clothes, or smelly clothes, or torn clothes. According to the code of Jewish law, I'm not allowed to wear clothes which are either stained, or torn, or smelly. And that goes for the body as well. We're supposed to... We'll get to that side of it in a few moments. So those are the negatives on the side of arrogance, where the body is associated. On the positive side, the positive side of arrogance, it's not really arrogance, it's maintenance, healthy maintenance. Healthy maintenance of our bodies means that we don't have to behave with material deprivation to deprive ourselves material on any level in order to be called humble. That's not humility. Humility is not walking low with old clothes, unclean, unkept, and torn, unclean shoes, etc. Humility is to wear clothes which give comfort, bring respect to the wearer. And therefore, if one's wearing in fashion, nothing wrong. Absolutely in. Absolutely okay. If a person is in a position of specific status socially, it may be very appropriate for them to wear more expensive clothing in order that the people they mix with should feel respect for them and not look down on them. And that's why, for example, a king in Israel has to take a haircut every day. We don't want one hair out of place because it reflects. In fact, a king is not allowed to be seen in the bathhouse. He has to go in alone. We don't want anyone seeing him alone because it will take away from the respect of the king. You would not see a king of Israel, King David, fishing. And you would not probably see him wearing Levi jeans. Jimmy Carter, okay. The president of America, listen, it's a different level. But a Jewish king is not allowed to be seen in a way that it might bring a lesser level of respect. Not disrespect, but a lesser level of awe and respect. The positive side, when it comes to the body, that we should live in comfortable homes. Buy items which increase the quality of my comfort so that I can free my mind up and concerns to get on with what's really important, whether it's raising the kids, building the family, whatever I would need to improve or make more efficient or make my life easy or increase my sanity in the home, whatever it is, that is considered a mitzvah. It's not considered an act of arrogance. If a person's, again, of a higher status in society, it may be required that one doesn't live in a very humble abode. There are other personalities who are extremely wealthy, that because of who they really are in their real lives, their simple abode makes that much more of an impression. I think of Rabbi Taube, Rabbi Israel Taube, who I don't think is ever mentioned on his tapes, but he's a multi-millionaire many times over, and he lives in a very simple home in Muncie. Very simple. He's built some mansions in real estate, but lives very simply. Yeah.
Isn't there an idea also of teaching that it's a big mitzvah to bring your children up in a humble and simple way, in simple surroundings, so that if they ever get into a situation where they don't have a lot of money, they won't fall apart?
Absolutely. We know everything depends. There's no real yes, no, absolutes over here. Everything will depend. It will depend on the financial status of the parents. It will depend on the social status of the parents. In some situations, because, let's say you would have a Reichman, for example, in the days when he was doing extremely well. So for him to maintain the respect of his business associates and being in the limelight that he was, it would be important that people see pictures of him in the type of cars or homes that would bring respect to him. On the other hand, what you're mentioning is very valid. How he brings his children up is very important. Rabbi Taube, for example, Rabbi Zul Taube, I'll never forget my wife saying that she was in Monsi Nagel's houseware. And Rabbi Taube, one of Rabbi Taube's daughters was there, going backwards and forwards whether or not to buy a certain toy which was worth a few dollars. See, if someone's thinking that way and they're brought up in a home where their father at one point was worth over $100 million, you know, that says so much about the values of money and money management that was taught to the children. So having a lot doesn't mean that the kid has to be spoilt. eating clean, or if you can afford, and you've got the cash flow, not credit cards, if you've got the cash flow, positive cash flow, buy clothes that befit your status. If it's beyond your cash flow, that would be an act of arrogance. I don't have the money, and I'm buying it. Why? For whom? What's the necessity? And maybe there is a need. Especially if I have a plan of how to pay back the loan, then that's more legitimate. But actually, halakhically, and just don't say this is a general statement, halakhically, am I allowed to take a loan not knowing how I'm going to pay it back? Or not having, in my present income status, the ability to pay off this loan? I'm not supposed to be taking such a loan. There may be exceptions. Have a quick question?
What would you consider the person who is wealthy, who lives simply, the person who is also wealthy, but lives a little bit more extravagantly? Would you consider one more humble than the other?
On the outside, it may look that way. But humility and arrogance is not necessarily external. There are manifestations on the outside of arrogance and humility. But essentially, arrogance and humility is an inside job. It's in this. So you can have a king who is screaming out Tudal Hashem all day long, thank you Hashem for all the blessings in my life. There's no arrogance there. He's as humble as another person who hasn't got enough and is living above his living standard, and as far as he's concerned, the reason why he drives this car or built this type of home is to quantify his wealth in public. That's arrogance. You go to Californian homes, they've got paintings over there with a black dot in the middle with a circle around it. $4 million. This is no exaggeration. Just open up Christie's, you see some of the most incredible paintings there, which my son could do much better. But and it's why would a person want a painting with a dot and a circle, which is worth $4 million, on the wall of his house, if not to quantify my wealth in public, private, whoever comes in? So the answer to your question, I think, really will depend. We're going to say, I'll quote right now an expression from Orchot Tzadikim, the same book that I'm taking this information from. Orchot Tzadikim says, I'm going to read to you in Hebrew for those who know Hebrew, and I'll translate. Kol ha nizha bedvarim elu l'shem mitzvah. Anyone who's careful with regard to these things, buying material items, and does so for the sake of a mitzvah, and don't think a mitzvah has to be just keeping Shabbos or keeping kosher, also has to do with sanity, it's a mitzvah to be sane. Well, I'm doing this to free me up so I can do more kindness to my family and extended family and even the community. The like they lit kashet, not in order to adorn oneself, whether it's clothes, jewelry, outer trappings, the type of furniture, the home, the car. If the reason why I buy this specifically is for a mitzvah's sake and not to just adorn myself, ulhit gaos, or to experience the arrogance that I'm better than you because I'm driving a better car. My kids go to a more expensive school. I'm on a higher position in business. Afal pish elu dvarim, even though these material items near him appear kamoi gaiva, as though an arrogant person would buy that, would live this way, drive that, hang that on the wall, have this as their furniture. Kivan, since shikvar nasai, his intent, since his mindset is l'shem shemayim, this is for the sake of a mitzvah, to bring cover to Hashem, yesh b'zeh mitzvah, there is in this a mitzvah, g'dayla, there's a great mitzvah in this. So we see that having a lot does not have to equal arrogance. It really depends how I display it and why I display it. So the Torah is not against materialism at all. And it's not a contradiction to working on one's humility. Eating clean food, not from the floor, not from dirty plates. Having a clean bedroom, and it's actually mentioned. Tidy office is my personal kiddush. A clean bathroom. Having hands and face which are clean at all times when we're not working. All this is called taking care of ourselves. Has nothing to do with arrogance. If we put on makeup and we wear perfume for our husbands, absolutely nothing to do with arrogance. It's called maintenance of my relationship. to help me feel good about myself whenever I see me, and more importantly, when others see me. Because essentially, your face does not belong to you. Your face was given for others. Until, of course, mirrors were discovered or invented, then we got to share our faces too. But think about it. The face is not for you and I, it's for other people. And therefore, to wear a smile is actually kindness from me to you. Moving on, number two, gaiva, arrogance and wisdom. The negative side, it's kind of obvious. I consider my wisdom, my advice, superior to yours, to my peers, to my elders. That's arrogance. If it's true that your advice and your information is superior to your peers and your elders, take pleasure. Todah Hashem. Thank you, Hashem, that you blessed me with this clarity. Thank you, Hashem, that I have this information. But if I use it to feel better than, I've made myself worse than. Because I'm never better. We might be better off. We're never better. A Jew is better off, but not better than. A king is better off, but not better than. Lady Diana was better off, but not better than. Better is always a reflection of how I live, the choices I make. But it's never a result of what's in my life. My status. That doesn't make me better. In fact, if I'm a king or a queen or a prince or princess, and in the limelight I sin, I play around, I live without limits, I'm worse off. Because here, in a massive, amazing way, this person in the limelight has an incredible ability to be a role model, to teach a lesson to others. And if a person lives an unlimited lifestyle and throws it away, Elizabeth Taylor, I shared this once, I'm not sure if it was this group, Elizabeth Taylor, I'll never forget, a person who in many ways has been out of control most of her life, adored by millions of people. Millions, it's not an exaggeration, she's adored and loved by millions for decades. I remember my father once working on a film where he had to have her come in to revoice a part in the film, and she was carried in by the porter of the hotel where she was staying, because till 3 o'clock in the morning she was on the phone to Richard Burton, at that time third marriage to the same man, and she was stone drunk. They couldn't get a word out of her mouth, because since 3 o'clock in the morning, somehow I guess the conversation didn't go too well, she was drinking for the rest of the night, totally stoned. I was wondering to myself, you know what, she's been through so much. So many lessons to draw upon, so many experiences, so much pain. Here's a woman that whatever she would say, positive or negative, millions of people are going to listen. That's an amazing opportunity to say something of real value. To say something like, you know what, after all that I've been through, this is what I have to offer. This is what I wanted people to hear. And reading in a magazine, Good Housekeeping. Good Housekeeping, a couple of weeks ago, I saw it in a doctor's office, whatever, turned up, an interview with Elizabeth Taylor after she just had a tumor removed,
brain tumor,
and she was asked what she thought about Sean Connery. What does she think about Sean Connery? And her statement was, Sean Connery can put his slippers under my bed any night of the week.
First of all.
Wait, one second. What about Mrs. Sean Connery? Where's your respect for loyalty in marriage? Even if Sean Connery is single again. Okay, you love Elizabeth Taylor more than me?
This is the entertainment world. You believe everything in the media? Maybe she was just saying that that's what's expected. The millions who love her, this is what they want to hear.
You know, let me help you over here. Let me help you. She has an opportunity when she's being exposed to hundreds of thousands or millions of people to say something of very deep value.
Yes. Okay. She's in a different world.
Okay, so what I'm saying over here is very simple. Our wisdom from our experience, the lessons we draw, we can use to hurt or to build ourselves and others. I'm giving maybe an extreme example. I'm not so sure it's so extreme, because in the media and the consumer media, which means the way we've been educated, inverted commas, by the media, we and our children, our peers, a lot of people have been, I don't want to use the word programmed or brainwashed, even though that might be close to the truth, we're taught, in very powerful association, that glamour, fame, film star,
excuses anything,
is the image I should look to reflect in my clothes, in my words, in what I read, what I talk about at parties, where I go, who I rub shoulders with. And I don't get in touch with the reality of my soul, the potential righteousness, which is a reflection of Hashem. So on the negative side, even directly or indirectly, fishing for compliments is a form of gaiva, a form of arrogance. Looking for, or fishing for. Now I'm not saying sometimes you need to remind someone you're very close to, did you notice? You have to do it sometimes in a gentle, nice way. But that's not fishing because you want to be recognized. It's just you need to remind them about what they need to see and recognize. If I look down, I'll just say one more statement, sorry. If I look down on another person for their lack of knowledge, arrogance, yeah.
I'm waiting till you come to weddings.
Okay. Okay. Says the Mishnah, Kol Aroidef Achar Kavod, anyone who runs after appreciation runs away. Anyone who doesn't run after appreciation runs after them. On the positive side, how to use wisdom in a way that's healthy. Using your wisdom to teach, to give lessons to myself first, to those who count most in our lives, our children, those we come into contact with, to see Hashem's kindness. I've been through so much in my life, I've got that many more experiences to draw upon and say, you know, after all that I've been through, I can honestly say that even amidst the pain, suffering and adversity that I've had in my life, I've been around long enough to notice that God was still smiling at me and I didn't realize it. Here was a hidden blessing in this relationship. This was a hidden blessing in that marriage which didn't work. And I thought I was a failure. I thought my marriage had failed. But I didn't realize till my second marriage how much my first marriage had taught me. And now I'm so mature, I'm almost grateful that I went through. I would never ask to be mature again that way. I would never choose to go through that relationship again to get another level of clarity and maturity, but I can look back and say with absolute sincerity that despite the pain, the suffering, the adversity, or even because of it, I recognize the blessings of who I am and what I have to give and what I have in my life because of what I've been through. Not just despite. So age, experience and wisdom has an amazing power. Grandchildren, just wait. When you pull out your journal for your grandchild, even if you never wrote it, but it's in here, and you share what you went through, very powerful references for that child to build their image of what counts in life. Grandpa, grandma, you were divorced. Oh my gosh, that's terrible. It was terrible. But let me tell you, what were the blessings? You are one of them. The way I treat myself and treat my new husband, what I learned from that. You were single for so long, and you only got married in your early 40s, and then you had one baby. How did you... Let me tell you what I had to tell myself on my 489th shidduch. Let me tell you that when I came home that night and I counted 500 shidduchim, 1,000 shidduchim, I smiled at myself in the mirror and I said, boy, you are made of metal. You're stronger than I thought. I hope you're not going for another 500. And we open up and cry to Hashem, please Hashem, help me see how I can draw upon 500 shidduchim, 500 failed dates, or 500 lessons. What happens if every date equals a lesson about relationships? Just one. Only one lesson. I imagine you could probably pull out more than one. But let's say we just choose for one lesson each date, and we file it in our journal, in the computer, wherever you want. Boy, how much wisdom do you have now? And how much have you got to share with someone who's in their late 30s, still looking, and you finally found, and you got married, and building up the marriage, what have you got to share now to the people you bring to your Shabbos table? What we do with our wisdom is a reflection of our either arrogance, hey, it's all me, or Todah Hashem, thank you Hashem for what you gave me. Now this is what I have to give others. What I've been through means I've got more to learn, draw upon. Ezehu Chacham, it's funny, it's the same Mishnah, it seems to be the only Mishnah I know. The same Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, in chapter of Fathers, chapter 4, Mishnah 1. Ezehu Chacham, who is the wise person? Halaymed Mikol Adam, the person who learns from everyone. Wisdom isn't empirical information alone. Wisdom is what I do with the information. Well, where's the lesson? What can I do from this? You go to a class. Oh, it's so boring. I can't believe it's so boring. Oh, why don't I, if I leave in the middle, it's going to be embarrassing. I'm going to say, before you go in, tell yourself, I might learn a lot, I might learn nothing, but one thing I'm going to commit myself to is I'm going to find one thing that's going to change my life in some way. It doesn't have to be big. One small distinction that perhaps will give me a new level of clarity on relationships, on Judaism, on my relationship with Hashem, with my children, with my spouse, with my singleness, with whatever it is. And once we told our brain that even if I don't enjoy the lecture or lecturer, but I've told my brain, look for something that will be useful in my life, is it possible that I could have been bored out of mind, slept most of the class, and picked up on one thing which was so useful that it was worth the whole lecture? Absolutely. So we know that Ezel Chacham, who is the wise person, everyone has something to teach us. Every experience has something to teach us. Like we said yesterday, there's two whys. Why me? Why does it have to happen to me? Well, we can analyze that. That's called Madua. Or where is this taking me to? Le Matu, what is this leading? What are the lessons that I can draw upon the past that's going to push me forward? Le Matu, what hidden blessing, silver lining might there be in the cloud that this is leading to? The sun is always shining above the clouds. The sun is, it's all, there's always something good to find. Says the Gemara in Brachas, Tractate Brachas, page 17, Tachlis Chochma, the purpose of wisdom, Teshuvah, is to make changes in myself, Umasim Tovim, and increase the quality of my behavior, my actions, my good deeds. The purpose of wisdom is not to lord it over you how much more I know, or how many more letters there are at the end of my name, or which colleges I went to. That's not wisdom, that's arrogance. Wisdom is what I do with my information. Do I make changes for myself? Do I improve my behavior because of it? Tachlis Chochma, the purpose of wisdom, Teshuva or Masim Tovim, is improving myself and doing good deeds. Using our special qualities to improve our own behavior, our own attitudes, our own speech, that's using wisdom in a way that when I give credit to myself, I say, thank you, Hashem, that you gave me this information, that I had this tape, this book, this teacher, this class, so that now I know better and I can improve myself. I now hold myself to another standard. I expect more. It's not what we always want, but better information, more clarity, pulls more out of us. To be more humble because we have more. To be more humble because we became more righteous, kind, caring, empathetic, forgiving, patient, happy. There's more to be humble about. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu was called the humblest of all men that ever walked the face of the earth. How could that be? He took the Jewish people out of the land of Egypt. He received the Torah at Mount Sinai. How do you call him the humblest of all men? He was the only person in the history of eternity written in the Torah that says God spoke to this person face to face. Moses opened his mouth. God was there. No one ever reached that level of prophecy. Amazing clarity. Unprecedented clarity. Humblest of all men? Look at your credentials, Moshe. How could it be that you're so humble? That every person counts so much more in your life, and you stand aside each time. And the answer is, Moshe Rabbeinu, every day he studied more and saw God more, recognized God's kindness more, he became more grateful, more appreciative, more dependent. in his realization of the gifts that came his way. So humility is an exact proportion to recognition of how much I'm recipient of the kindness of God through other people, of the kindness of God through the people who are helping me in my life, our spouses, our children, our boss, our clients. A quick joke, since I've violated and I've got my hat trick 3 days in a row, no break. Quick joke to wake you up. This is mine about Moshe Rabbeinu. Yasser Arafat was found dead in the gut of Jerusalem with 18 stab wounds, and the local rabbi said it was the worst case of suicide he ever saw. And when he came in front of the divine, he was offered to meet any holy man he wants. So who do you think Arafat would choose? Muhammad. So he said, Muhammad? Says Muhammad, first door on the right. He starts trembling. He's going to see the holy prophet Muhammad. Hashem should forgive me, I'm saying this in front of him. He goes, knocks on the first door on the right, and the door opens up. Tall man, long white beard, shining countenance, long white gown. Get sound effects as well, same price. Yes? Muhammad? No, Moses. Moses, I'm so sorry. Long door, I'm so sorry. Now he's really going to get what he's done to our people. And Moses says, no, you came to my place, please come inside. You're at my door now, please come inside. No, please, I came to my place, I don't want to bother you, stop me, please. Arafat, come inside, let me offer you some hospitality now that you're in my door. So I can't refuse, he's going in, knees shaking, sits down, and Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, says to him, what would you like? Tea or coffee? No, please, nothing for me, no. Tea or coffee? Coffee? Muhammad! Okay. Be careful who you quote that to. Okay. Okay. Moving on to number three. Number three of arrogance is... Oh, sorry, you have a question.
How would God do this, or how would you, not from that level, but... would you say that a man, or that, who would we expect a man's wealth, being more humble? Like, is their challenge more difficult to be humble, or is a man who is not wealthy?
Yeah. What is your name, sorry?
Mandana.
Mandana's question is like this, if I got you right. Which is a greater test for arrogance or humility? A lot of wealth or lack of? Is that pretty much your question?
Yeah.
The answer is like this. The more you have, the more you have to be grateful for. And therefore, the bigger test of gratitude, and the more this came from my credentials, my decisions in the business, my spending time with my kids on a daily basis, and that's why I've got such great kids. Oh yeah? Yeah? Today you can do everything right. No guarantees. The fruit always falls far from the tree that used to be, says the Chofetz Chaim, if there's no storm. But if there's a storm, you can't guarantee where your kids are going to end up, because there's so many other variables. You can do everything right and still not be certain. God signs the check. God brings other people into the lives of our children that can affect adversely or positively. So the more we have materially, the more we have the nisoyan, the test of gratitude. If I have $100,000, that's 100,000 thank yous. But it's more than 100,000, because what the dollars then bought me and benefited me is another thank you for whatever I bought with those 100. If I've got 200,000, that's 200,000 thank yous. If I've got 1,000,000, that's 1,000,000 thank yous. So it ends up, I've got more to be grateful for, and as human nature is, we described yesterday, Adam, the first man, complained to God when he was told, why did you eat from the tree? And he said, that wife that you gave me. He couldn't admit all that he owed, and so he paid back 25 cents. All I'm admitting is what I got, but I'm not going to say what I got from it. If I have to do that, I have to let go of Koichi the Oitzim Yadi, Asa Li et Achayim Lazer, that my strength, my talents, my credentials got me where I am. Instead of two words, Todah Hashem, thank you Hashem. So poverty has its test. No one asks for it. Interestingly enough, it's possible. that owning more, having more wealth is a greater test. It doesn't mean that one's better than the other for it. Everyone's got their at their level. Quick question here. I'll finish up.
The man is possibly challenged, but he doesn't do better.
Sorry, what's the question?
I thought I pressed.
The comment, sorry.
The man is possibly challenged. What he does with his wealth.
Right.
How is it being used?
Yeah, beautiful. Right.
I know people who go for their children designer clothes because they got chubby, but they took off the button, it says it's Templar or whatever, and put on plain button. The girl doesn't have to be.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
Very special. That's a beautiful example. A beautiful example of having it. That Rabbi Miller in Gateshead, who's a Talmud of Rabbi Dessler, so I once heard him say, if you have it, sorry, no, that's wrong. If you can do without it, you can have it.
Mm-hmm.
If you can do without it, you can have it, and it probably won't affect the arrogance. Probably have only a positive effect. Wealth. Number three, we said there are three categories of arrogance where we manifest it. The third one is wealth. The negative side is flaunting my wealth. Flaunting it, putting it in front of people, because the message is, I want you to know that this is what I drive, this is where I live, this is the house I live in, these are the paintings I buy, this is the food that I eat, this is the brand that I smoke, this, etc. This is where I shop. I never forget, there was on Miami Beach, there were three elderly ladies talking to each other, and they were admiring each other's diamonds. So one of the ladies there, she only had one diamond on her finger, and the other ones like, you know, spread around all their fingers. So Mrs. Rothenberg said to Mrs. Berkowitz, Mrs. Berkowitz, where do you go when you need your diamond polished? So Mrs. Berkowitz said, me? Well, we have a very expensive man. It's in Scotland, but he's very good, does very good work. We said, oh, very nice. And they both turn with their fingers covered in diamonds to Mrs. Cohen, who's got one diamond on her finger. And, says, and Mrs. Cohen, where do you go when you want your diamond cleaned? I said, oh, I throw it away and buy another one. She was the rich one. Don't flaunt wealth in public. If I use my wealth to hurt other people, I will end up losing it. And if I don't lose it in this world, I'm going to pay a bigger price upstairs because I had it. And it wasn't for me. 1/10 tzedakah. And if I'm super wealthy and I can afford more, I'm allowed to give more than 1/5, which is usually forbidden. I'm not allowed to give more than 1/5 of my profits away in case I end up becoming a charity case. That's how sensitive the halacha is about taking care of your wealth. But someone who's super wealthy, let's say a billionaire, and he gives away 100 million, or 200 million, or 300 million, or 500, or 900 million, and is only left with 100 million, in halacha, that's not a prohibition, it's not a violation, because you can live pretty well, month by month, on 100 million too. Don't flaunt our clothes, our jewelry. If we want it to look beautiful for our husbands, for our wives, in the home. But if it's going to a wedding or bar mitzvah, watch out. That's not what it's about. Dress beautifully for oneself and for others. Your face doesn't belong to you. But don't hurt others because they don't have and I do. I want to finish these few points up. But I want to take your question. Please don't forget it. Causing ayin hara with my possessions. Ayin hara literally means a negative eye, the mind's eye. Hurting other people's feelings because I have and they don't, and helping them feel that causes ayin hara. Ayin hara means upstairs it's on file that I hurt so and so because of what I have. And I go around my Rolls Royce and the new Rolls Royce, and that's funny. The next morning, there's this long scratch all along the side. That's called ayin hara. Don't flaunt it. I will lose it or get damaged. Or has v'shalom, it might be taken out somewhere else and it won't be metal. To gain respect and recognition, to use my wealth to gain respect and recognition, if I'm doing it L'shem shemayim, for the sake of a mitzvah, because by associating with these type of people, they have a different respect for a religious Jew, and now they'll do business with me, and that enables me to have better contacts to help this charity, or to help this institute, or support this yeshiva, or to take on this project. That's l'shem shemayim, if I am doing this in order that others know who I rub shoulders with, in order that I can flaunt in front of others my wealth. That's arrogance, it's negative, I'm not allowed, it's the same money, it's the same wealth, it's what I do with it. Ultimately, Hashem's the source of our wealth. Li ha-kesef v'li ha-zahav neum Hashem, it all belongs to me, says God, it's all unknown to you. I give you 100,000, I ask you to give back 10,000. And I think, wait a minute, why should I give 10,000 back? Because I really worked hard for that. Hashem says, I gave you 90 plus another 10, so you take that 10 and give it to someone else. I'll finish off this, and then there are three people with their hands up. Wealth is Hashem's gift for me to grow and share and become more grateful because I have more. Giving tzedakah, giving charity, helps uproot gaiva, arrogance, because it's a physical act of giving away what came to me. And that's a reminder to myself that it's not mine. Feeling pain for other people's physical suffering and praying on their behalf breaks the gaiva, the arrogance of a person who has, enjoys good health and has more than others. Enjoying one's body, one's mind, one's money, possessions, enjoying what we've got is the exercise of happiness. It's desirable. It's a mitzvah to enjoy what we have. More we have, more potential happiness, more gratitude, more appreciation. That's what it's really about. The psychology of arrogance is I don't want to feel that I could not have got here without your help. I prefer to believe that this is mine because of me. And no, you didn't have any part of it. And since you didn't have any part of it, why should I share it? Why should I give any of it away? And if I give anyway, it's on my terms. I decide. That's the danger we're talking about. I'll take questions and I'll end off on the... Well, let me finish. I've got one last point and that's the end of my presentation and then I'll take questions. Yesterday we had a one and only strategy for long-term controlling anger, and that was speaking softly. There are other strategies, but that's the main one that's talked about. If I would consistently hold grip onto that, eventually I will master anger. What would be one strategy for breaking arrogance? As a checkup from the neck up. It's not mine. It's all stolen. Sorry? No, I didn't. Zig Ziglar heard that from. What would be a number one strategy? I have to say B'Shem Amrei. I have to say in the name of whom you heard it.
Well, it would be remembering.
Absolutely. Hakaras HaTov means gratitude, recognizing the good that's in my life. Saying thank you Hashem. Two words. Thank you Hashem. Fill in the blank. For my home, my house, my wealth, my eyes. We have blessings. It all comes together. Happiness, anger, arrogance, patience, all comes together. Happiness is training ourselves to verbally appreciate in our minds, in our words, in our actions, what's already good. And the more we do that, the more we enjoy what's actually good in our lives, and the more we can enjoy what's coming and move ourselves forward. So arrogance is broken by recognizing you, Hashem, are the source of this kindness in my life. The more I say thank you, Hashem, and thank you to the male people, the male persons along the way, the wife, the husband, the children, the boss, whoever it is, the rabbi this, the represent that, the people who had me for Shabbos, my friends, my neighbors, whoever's been and is in my life and has given and shared of what they have to me, my Hakaras HaTov is admitting that I didn't do it alone. I'm who I am not because of me, but because of you. I made some very good decisions along the way thanks to the opportunities you gave me. Thanks to the options Hashem opened up for me. The possibilities that came my way. So thanking Hashem, blessings. Thank you for my eyes. Pukeach Ivrim, Malbish Arumim. Thank you for my clothes. Shechianu, for every new event and new clothing. Shasali Kol Tzarki, you provide me with all my needs, refers to shoes. We thank Hashem for water, Netilat Yadayim. We thank Hashem for the air. Elokai Neshama, Neshama Neshima, Shinatata Bi, the breath you've given me. Thank you, Hashem, for the sunlight. Yetzem ha'ayres. There is almost nothing which is physical in this world which we don't have a blessing for, in order to train ourselves, not just in being grateful to Hashem because He needs the tickles. He doesn't need the tickles. We need to be happy. It's a craving that's programmed into our minds and our souls. So the one strategy is grateful, appreciation, thank you, husband, wife, whoever it is, thank you, Hashem. Questions?
Right. And it has nothing to do with impressing other people.
Right.
Right. Is there,
why not? Absolutely. Of course. Absolutely.
But tell everybody it's fascinating. And the second part of this question is, how do you persuade people that you really are grateful for it? Because how would you know whether someone's wearing this or that if they're grateful for what they have? Because as an outsider, you can look at them and say, oh, look, they're showing off their jewelry. But the other person
can
really be
appreciative of this. Right. Excellent question. How do you try to ensure that if I'm wearing this for positive motivational reasons that are l'shem shamayim, and others may not be aware of that, and compared to what they've got, this really might look arrogant, especially that I can afford and I do afford and they can't. So how do you try and ensure that it doesn't come out that looks arrogant for them? Is that part of the question? We have to pray to Hashem. Please, Hashem, help me be happy, help me be appreciative, help me in my arrogance, that I should always act humbly, and even what I have, please help that should not be a source of pain for those who have not. I can't do more than that. You know, Hashem, I want to wear this because I feel good about it. It helps other people to respect me in the milieu and the surroundings and the type of business that I do, the type of social settings that I work in. Please, Hashem, I don't want that someone who hasn't got should be hurt by what I wear or what I have or who I am. And you make a prayer and that's it. There's nothing more you need to worry about. Nothing more. And you say it sincerely, you've covered bases.
Is there a way that you can ask people around you?
Sorry? People will feel it. Your sincerity eventually will penetrate the thickest people. Absolutely. Question?
It's not a question.
Okay.
That.
Yeah.
The mothers send their girls, their daughters to seminary in Israel.
Right.
And they tell the daughters to leave their jewelry behind because there may be others who don't have it.
Okay, very beautiful. That's a special lesson. Question is, all their jewelry?
Yes, all.
Right. Okay. You had a question? Sorry, a point you wanted to make? No.
For charity, how come if God gives you like a certain amount and really 10% less is what you should be getting, how come God doesn't give that money to somebody who should be getting?
Why doesn't Hashem do the distribution for us? Okay, the answer is because Hashem wants us to finish off the perfection in this world. He wants us to. The question was, if 10% of my stock is supposed to go to this poor guy, and it's dependent on my free will, and might not even get there, why doesn't Hashem just directly send it into his bank account instead of go to me, and I'm supposed to give it to him? And the answer is Hashem wants rich people, Hashem wants poor people. Rich people have the opportunity to give, and the poor people are the ones who are providing that opportunity. If I think I'm better than you because I got the money, I'm in bad shape. Free will, yeah. Last point, and then we'll close it. So you have a question or a point you want to make?
Yeah, I want to say some rabbis really live like it's surprising. Which rabbi is
not like when they come to Israel, so there's like
the
most luxurious car
and the
money to
drive
them. It's just perfect,
like Hasidic rabbi, the fish they give, whatever
day,
you know, they make a
motzi, and
they give it to everyone. It's like
some
arrogance. Here, I just touched it, and now
it's right. Question. What happens if you're a Hasidic rabbi, and everyone's coming to you for brachas, and you've got a ton of food in front of you, and you're giving it out? Isn't it arrogance? And again, what we said before, is that your question?
Yeah, just by touching it, and now I'm giving you the blessing, but touching it, and now you benefit.
Right.
Isn't that arrogance?
Well, the question over here is, you have to ask the Rebbe himself, what's going on, what conversation is taking place in your mind when you're giving this out?
Sharing.
So that's the real question. It's a personal choice. Are there rabbis who are arrogant or not? I'm not in that milieu to be able to tell you, but my guess is there are very few.